Welcome to another episode of the How to Save the World podcast, where we take a deep dive into the academic research and behavioural science of what really gets people to take pro-environmental action and behaviour. I'm your host, Katie Patrick. I'm an environmental engineer and a designer based in Silicon Valley, California, and I'm the author of the book, How to Save the World. Hi, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to tune in again to the How to Save the World podcast, where we talk about the behavioral science and gamification, action design, and environmental psychology of how we get people to do the environmental behavior or action that we need them to do. And today, what I wanted to do is summarize the whole body of work, the whole thing that I do, what this is all about, into a nutshell. And this is the great thing about being forced to put things in a nutshell, is they kind of force you to like dig down and succinctly put it all into one thing. So what I'm going to do right now is explain basically sort of my keynote guest lecture, the way that I tell the whole story of environmental psychology and why it's necessary, into this really nice little tidy framework. And this is how it goes. We make three big mistakes when we are trying to influence humans to do something for the planet. And these three big mistakes are, number one, education. We think that if we give people more knowledge and more education, then they will take more action. This is called the value action gap. It is shown time and time again in behavioral science. We all make this mistake. It's also called the information deficit hypothesis. And that means that if people just had more information about climate change, if they just knew more about the data, if they knew more about pollution or about the trees being cut down, then they would act. And that's why it's called the information deficit hypothesis, because it's been shown that just giving people more information about the issue, it just doesn't drive action or behavior. The second thing is caring. We think that people are selfish or they're uncaring, and if we just got people to just care more about the whales and the trees and about the climate, then they would act. But again, this is part of the value action gap. Most people care about the planet. Most people really do care about the trees and about the whales, but caring in itself isn't enough to necessarily drive us to do the actions, the behaviors in the physical world that are required. And the third biggest mistake is money. We assume that if everything was cheaper or if that bad thing was more expensive, then the economy and the financial drivers would just get people to change. But people aren't anywhere nearly as motivated by money as we might think they are. So just providing financial incentives or taxes often isn't enough to actually drive the behavior. But the thing is, when we look into the human brain, there are five major levers that govern our behavior that we can use instead of these three things that don't work that well, that actually do drive people to change. Now, let me explain what they are. The first one is goals and rewards. We have a dopamine reward system in our brain. This dopamine system focuses on a goal, decides that we want to do this goal, and then we track the progress towards the goal. This is the basis of gamification design. So when you're designing something, you've got to ask, have I gotten people to commit to the environmental goal that we want to have happen? Do we have a mechanism of tracking progress? And in a feedback loop, are we rewarding people when they make progress? And are we not rewarding them with a bit of a carrot and stick process when they are not making progress? And then we are ushering them with our action design to get them to go through and then get that dopamine boost when they finally achieve the goal. And all gamification and behavior design comes from this system that reflects our natural dopamine system that we have in our brain. And unfortunately, a lot of environmental projects and climate projects are missing this basic foundational structure of having a goal, having a starting point, and tracking the progress and rewarding people as they make progress towards the end. The second lever that taps right into the motivational core of our human psychology is social comparison. It's how we compare ourselves to other people in a group. Am I doing 20% better than average? Am I doing 20% worse than average? And this requires getting the data for a group of people or businesses, corporations, schools, whatever organization it is. You need to find a measurement of what you want to change, the carbon emissions, the water consumption, the amount of trees you've got per block, whatever it is. And then you want to rank them together from highest to lowest and figure out what the average is. And you'll find that when you tell the organizations or people, whatever it is, that they're doing worse than average, the ones that are performing lower than 50%, they will be very, very motivated to get over that average line and to get into the like sort of above average. We deeply do not want to be below average. And when we see our data all compared against each other, we get deeply motivated to want to improve it. This is core to our group psychology. Human beings are group organisms. We have evolved to live in tribes, to do better within our tribe, to compete with other tribes. This is why the structure of sports is so sticky and so popular and so salient, because it is core to our design to compare how we are doing to everybody else and to want to improve our status and our standing within the group. You don't even have to know anything or even really care about the planet, but just giving people a number and comparing them will drive the action that you want to have happen. And it's just kind of necessary disclosure to just sort of figure out what your numbers are anyway if you want to start making a change. The third big lever to the human brain is human imitation. All human beings learn things and behave because they are imitating what they believe is normal and acceptable and done by the group. We actually can't even help but to imitate the people around us. If you go to a party and people are doing a certain sort of thing, like drinking a certain way or standing a certain way, or behaving in a certain way, it's very, very awkward to actually behave differently. Our unconscious mind automatically imitates what we see people doing. So in any way that you can show what is called a norm, a social norm, it can be a picture of the action that you want people to do. It can be written down, like 82% of people in our community are doing this. Or it could be like in real life. You could actually be going in real life to a workshop where you see people doing the action that you want people to do. We have to put people into environments or into groups where they're actually witnessing the action, and then they will copy, quite often even unconsciously, copy the action. And that is how human behavior and changes in human culture spread from person to person through a process called social diffusion. And it is not done through people intellectually learning things and then thinking with their intellectual mind, maybe I'll do this. It happens because you meet somebody and then you meet another person, and then you meet another person who's doing this particular behavior, listening to this music, adopting this belief system, and then you copy the people that are close to you that you know and trust. That is called social imitation or social norms. The fourth big lever to human motivation is group identity. Think about how humans are so strongly identified with sports teams, to political identities, to places that they live, or bands, or tribes, or subcultures. By getting people into a group and getting people to have a certain type of identity with that group, like I am a this type of person, I'm a that type of person, this is our club, this is who we are, this is who I identify as a person, you can get a group. It can be like a small group. It doesn't need to be really big, like a political party. It can be a group of 10 people. And these people have like a name and they have sort of a subscription to this group, an identity with this group, and a social bond with this group. And then when they have that kind of group identity, that group is going to keep them accountable to the particular behaviors and the values of the group. And you can have multiple groups with multiple different group identities, kind of like football teams under one big kind of football banner. And then once people are in those groups are very psychologically sticky. We will only usually behave in the way that the group deems acceptable, and we will always norm to the group. So any way that you can create groups of people, you can create an identity around that group, you can create like a name or a color or a creature. I just would love to see this more spread within the environmental movement, is this idea of fun kind of like groups and names and cultures, and then deciding, you know, what is the action that you really want to have this group adopt, and then tracking that. And the fifth one is trust. In behavioral science, when we're using the theory of trust, it is called making a commitment device. And this can be as simple as just getting a pen and paper and writing down, I commit to do this thing. I commit to composting every day for the month of February. And then you can put it in a drawer. Like, nobody else even needs to see the written commitment. It'll work. But when you do show it to other people, if you take a selfie of that and then you put it on Instagram, or you put it on a wall with a whole bunch of other people's selfies with everybody saying, we're committing to composting for 30 days, it gets printed in the local newspaper. It becomes far more sticky, or far more salient. It's a word used in academic psychology. It is remarkably powerful. It's cheap and it's easy to use. Any way that you can ask somebody, would you like to commit to doing this behavior? Let them say yes or no. If they say yes, then ask them to write it down. Could you write it down? I commit to doing this. Kind of like non-formal contract in a way. But when the two people together have made this kind of informal contract, they've created a trust bond. And this trust bond is fundamental to human relationships. Think about when somebody lies to you, even if it's a small lie, it fundamentally erodes the bond between you and that person. And we survive through our social bonds. Humans cannot survive alone. So when we're using this theory of trust, this idea of, like, I promise to you that I'm going to compost, that harks right to the core of our survival mechanism. And that's why these five levers that I'm explaining today, they go deeper. They go not just as a metaphor deeper, but they actually literally go deeper into the human brain structure, into these survival mechanisms that are what kept humans alive through thousands of years of evolution. And we can sort of tap into these deeper mechanisms, and then we can use them in these simple behavioral tools, like I'll write a note to you that I promise to do something, pulls on that sense of trust between two people. And we deeply, deeply never ever want to break trust with another person. It's remarkably powerful, cheap, easy, works every time. And you can use it for your environmental campaigns. It'll be far more beneficial and useful than if you're doing something that's education or emotional or financially based, like a conference or a documentary, or providing extra financial incentives or a free $50 award for something. You can use these five things to pull people in. So let me just summarize what they are again. Number one, goals and tracking progress towards the goal, reflecting the brain's dopamine system. Number two, social comparison. Get some data for all of the players, figure out what it is, find out what the average is, compare them all to each other, and then figure out which people are above average and which people are below average, and really focus on the below average people to try to increase their performance to get them above average. Number three is social imitation. You've got to show pictures and examples of people doing the behavior so other people will copy it. You can't just be showing pictures of the problem of why everything's bad. Show the solution. Show real humans that are like them, similar types of humans, doing the behavior in pictures, in words, in the way it's written, and in real life, and encourage people to imitate these behaviors. And number four, group identity. Make sure you are putting people into groups. Give the group some sort of name or some sort of identity around that. Create social bonds within the groups, and then figure out what the action is that you want these groups to take. And the group, the social stickiness of the group, will do the heavy lifting for you. And the final one, commitment devices or trust. Get people to write down their commitment or say it into camera, take a photo of a selfie of it, of making a promise of whatever action they are going to do, and they will most likely come through at the end with it. If you'd like to know more about how to design behavioral psychology and gamification and climate action design for your project, I would encourage you to please do my behavior mapping masterclass. We go through 2 hours of 96 different social marketing, UI, UX, behavioral science, game design techniques, and how to apply them to actually move the needle on the dial of your specific environmental measurement that you want to take. I've taught this to the UN, to Google, to NASA, I can't even remember all the organizations now. I've taught it to so many organizations, high-level tech companies, building management software systems, right down to indie activists and clean tech startups. And it's just an essential process to learn, to go through your project, go through your mission, and apply a very specific, detailed, and surgical process to make sure that you are bringing people on, cueing them to act, and then applying all of the behavioral drivers that are available to you to get that target person to do the action that you want them to take that's going to shift the environmental numbers in a full feedback loop system. It's available at my new Positive Eco Futures store called Ecopia Store. There's also cool art and t-shirts and stuff that you can get there, but I would really encourage you to do this course. It's under $100. It's 2 hours of videos, totally affordable. And these 2 hours of videos will just be, if you really do it properly and you concentrate, it'll really be transformational. And there's other courses you can do there on storytelling and gamification and UI UX design for action design. But the Behavior Mapping Masterclass is really the most detailed overarching process that I take clients through in how to not get caught in these big three mistakes, circumvent all of that, and really focus on the big five drivers. And there's multiple different techniques that you can use under those drivers in how you design out your campaign to make sure action happens. And if you like the idea of me working with you one-on-one to go through the behavior mapping process, go through the 96 different behavioral drivers, evidence-based, that make change happen, I also do one-on-one workshops with you where I'll go away and like help you come up with the actual ideas and concepts that you need. And like I said, this isn't just a indie sort of like hacker, like small fry thing. Like I've done this for major international companies, including like the United Nations, Google, Harvard, Stanford, the US Department of State, and big engineering companies that aren't big household brands, so I won't mention them. But major engineering companies working on big property portfolios of how to apply these evidence-based techniques. And they all work, whether you're doing something that's really big and international and global, or whether you're just working in your own community as like an independently funded person. Like, you've got to be using these core principles that tap into the human mind. And when you do it, it's really fun. It's really, really fun. You can move past the difficult, like doom and gloom, burnout sort of phase of activism, which I think we've all been through. And it actually genuinely starts to be fun because you're seeing your own work actually happen and it starts to feel right. You go like, yeah, this is how it gets done. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest in behavioral science and environmental psychology and climate action design. I hope you were able to have a look at the new store, ecopiastore.com. All of my courses are on there, as well as art and t-shirts and calendars and fun stuff like that. And I'll see you in the next episode.